Here we go.
Hello.
Welcome back to Finding Our Mind Season 2. I'm so excited. Can you tell?
Welcome to Finding Our Mind Season Dos. Wherein I count to 2 in all the languages I know. Here we go. Uno, dos, ich, ni, hana, do. Okay, I'm sorry. I apologize to our listeners.
Okay. This is what happens when we're away for too long. We get a little weird.
Yeah, we get squirrely. So we are talking about some pretty deep subject matter this season. I know last season was just really light and fluffy and easy to digest subject matter that wasn't, you know, difficult to understand at all. but this season we are talking about
narcissistic abuse.
That's probably the happiest anyone's ever sounded saying narcissistic abuse.
Well, certainly narcissistic abuse is an issue that affects many, many, many people. And there's so much out in the world about it. But I think that this season we're going to bring a little bit of a unique perspective to it. I think that people are going to be a little bit surprised when they finally hear me lay out my full theory of what's going on with narcissistic abuse.
I definitely think so, not just because I'm producing the podcast, but I think it's a really important conversation. I'm very excited that we're tackling this very specific topic for a whole season because narcissistic abuse is prevalent in all parts of all individuals' lives. It is a topic that every single person has interacted with on a micro or macro level.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
From, you know, maybe a person that you're engaging in business with is doing something shady and telling you that what you're seeing isn't what you're seeing. Gaslighting.
Right.
Right. Small examples such as that to, you know, serious intimate partner abuse, which so many people suffer.
Yep. Absolutely up the scale. And one of the little side things is in order to talk about narcissistic abuse, we get into what is personality? And I think that's an interesting and informative topic and that relates to mental health and mental well-being. And of course, we have to talk about what is narcissism. And that's a whole subject that we unpack that relates to mental well-being. And so I think that while the entire season is about narcissistic abuse, there are some little side tributaries that we take that are just kind of educational topics for general people who are interested in mind and having a healthy mind.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I love that you said, you know, you can't divorce this from personality, from conversations about personality.
Right.
You say in the episode today that narcissism itself is about one's own sense of self.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. Certainly anybody who knows my work knows that sense of self is a central aspect of mind and of mental well-being. And sense of self is very, very tied up with personality, right? Mm-hmm. So it all kind of starts to come together.
Yeah. So I am going to give just a brief, light, quick trigger warning that we are talking about abuse. And if you've ever suffered abuse and, you know, survived abuse, this is going to be heavy subject matter. I intend to talk about experiences from my past throughout the season. I'm going to invite my mom to talk about experiences from her past. We're going to see how we chip away at those therapy walls she's put up, that professional wall.
Good luck with that.
I think it's really important if we're going to talk about this topic for the whole season to say right now and to continue saying if you've ever suffered this, if you've survived this, not your fault.
So not your fault. And along with that trigger warning, I want to add this. A lot of people have not reflected on why they feel about themselves and their lives as badly as they do. And when they begin to hear the contents of the podcast, they may get the sudden realization, oh my God, I never thought of myself as a person who experienced abuse. But if what you're saying is accurate, then maybe I was abused. And that can be disorienting in and of itself too. Mm-hmm. And always, 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 if for whatever reason you begin to feel discomfort or confusion, seek help. There are so many people who want to help you and want to see you strong and your best. Please reach out and get professional
Absolutely. Help. And to come to the realization that you think you've suffered abuse, either from an intimate partner, a person in your life, a job, an institution, that's not a reflection on you at all. That's not anything new about your personality that you're learning. That's not about you. That's about something that you lived through. You're on the other side of it now. These things tend to come up when we're in good places. The brain can finally process it. And so good for you for doing that work. And please go talk to somebody. Go talk to a professional as well as a trusted loved one. Psychological abuse is also a poorly defined concept in general, and you talk about that in this first episode. It's also poorly treated and not given a safe space to explore. You know, people undermine psychological abuse. You know, survivors come forward and say, I think I was really psychologically abused. And people go, yeah, but you weren't hit. So like, what's, you know, who cares? And again, here to scream on top of my little podcast soapbox, this is important. This is serious. You matter. You know, a lot of the abuses I've suffered in my life have come from, you know, institutionalized bullying. It took me a long time to be okay calling that for what it was, which was abuse against me. It was institutionalized abuse against me. So I'm here to say any experience that you think that you've had that you feel a certain way about, you know, trust yourself. You get to define your experiences.
Trust yourself. You get to define your experiences. Very well put. And I want to add that there may be some forces in the world that you've internalized these voices that call you a snowflake or something, you know, if you say, I was abused. But you need to know, I mean, what we established last season was mind is real. Mm-hmm. It's real. It's just as real as your body. Mm-hmm. And when somebody systematically hurts your mind, it's just as real as anybody hurting your body.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So serious, serious stuff. We're talking about serious stuff this season. So I also tend to deal with serious things with a sense of humor. So you might hear me crack a wise every now and then, and that is not ever to be flippant or disrespectful to the subject matter. It's only to add levity, and that's just how I handle the world. And we really want to hear from you this season. I really want, I want all of our listeners to write in. Give us your thoughts. Give us your opinions. Add to the conversation. If, you know, if you think that sending us an email is a safe space to say, hey, I've processed some abuse. You know, I've really put a lot of thought to it, started processing it, and this is what I have to say on the matter. Please write to us. We cannot be your therapist. So if this is something that you have not yet processed, I recommend going and speaking to somebody else. But if you really want to join this conversation with us, please do, because we need people speaking out about it. We need people talking about how they got through it and what they're doing now, and that you can live a healthy, successful life on the other side of it.
And there's somebody who can benefit from your experience. And I think that's one of the reasons why Leah is so willing and able to put herself out there this episode in talking about her own experiences. It's with the knowledge that somebody can benefit from her sharing her experiences.
I know that there's one other neurodivergent woman in this world who was bullied a lot in school for just being too gosh darn cool. I see you. I see you, honey. You're here. You're going to be fine. All right. Let's get into it, yeah? Let's hear the first episode today.
Here we go. In season two of Finding Our Minds, we're going to take a deep dive into narcissistic abuse. Let me preview some of the twists and turns of the path we're taking. Today, I'm going to talk about the perspective on abuse from peer-reviewed academic journals. Those researchers don't talk about narcissistic abuse. They use different terms. In spite of the amount of research they've done, there's still not a lot of agreement on what exactly constitutes this kind of abuse. Then I'll turn to narcissistic abuse as the term is used today and look at the concepts of gaslighting and energy vampires. In order to understand the concept of narcissistic abuse, it's going to be important to understand what we mean by narcissism. This means we'll have to understand personality and personality disorders. It also means that we'll have to take a close look at narcissism, as well as a couple of other personality disorders that are frequently associated with abusers. Then, in order to lay the foundation for my theory on what exactly narcissistic abuse is, we'll have to look at psi, also known as parapsychology. That's things like extrasensory perception, which includes things like telepathy, precognition, clairvoyance, among other things. I'll look at some findings that help us understand how narcissistic abuse is accomplished. We'll also look a bit at psi and psychopathology, because some mainstream psychologists and psychiatrists believe that anyone who believes in psi is mentally ill. We need to know that that is simply not true. We'll also look at how psi, especially telepathy, has been recognized among psychoanalysts since Freud. It's always been there, although it hasn't been a main point that's been embraced by the majority of analysts. Finally, we'll dive into healing. How do therapists help clients heal from narcissistic abuse? And how can you help yourself heal? So that's an overview of the season. If there's something in particular you'd like to hear about in relation to narcissistic abuse, let us know. Drop us a line at our email, findingourminds@gmail.com, or post on our Facebook page, Finding Our Minds Podcast. Okay, let's go. The term narcissistic abuse is quite popular these days. There are a number of books on the topic, a host of videos on the internet, along with blogs and podcasts. So why are we creating yet more content on the topic? Because we're going to look at narcissistic abuse through a particular lens, a mind-centered lens. We're going to take the view of mind and wellness and pathology that we laid out in season one of Finding Our Minds and see how they inform our understanding of narcissistic abuse and especially how they inform our take on how we can heal from narcissistic abuse. What do we mean when we use the term narcissistic abuse? The term implies that the perpetrator of the abuse is a narcissist and perhaps has narcissistic personality disorder. We'll explore that concept in a future episode, although I'd like to make a point about that now. The term can be understood in a different way. Narcissism is about one's sense of self, about the way you feel about yourself. Psychological, emotional, verbal abuse affect the way the victim feels about themselves. Therefore, this type of abuse is damage to the narcissistic or self-functioning of the victim. That's perhaps a fine point. In the professional literature, peer-reviewed academic journals, they don't use the term narcissistic. They talk about psychological, emotional, mental, or verbal abuse. Psychological abuse is a very poorly defined concept. Lots of scholars argue about what it means and especially how they can measure it. Of course, if you're going to look at questions like how prevalent it is, the effects of psychological abuse, and how to provide adequate treatment to heal from it, you're going to have to be able to define exactly what it is. There are two bodies of literature on the topic. One is in relation to child abuse. Another area of interest that got early attention by researchers was among female victims of intimate partner violence perpetrated by men. Yes, sexist and heteronormative. Researchers noted what the professionals were calling, quote, non-physical aggression, unquote. The victims of this behavior often reported that it was more damaging than the physical violence the men were committing. Early in this work, researchers and treatment providers defined psychological abuse as a behavior that showed up on a list of behaviors that are psychologically abusive. Yes, that's completely circular. Sometimes they specified that some given number of these behaviors had to occur within a given time frame to qualify as psychological abuse. Some examples of these behaviors are, and I'm lifting from a list developed by Richard Tolman back in 1989, my partner put down my physical appearance. My partner treated me like an inferior. My partner tried to keep me from seeing or talking to my family. My partner gave me the silent treatment or acted like I wasn't there. My partner did not let me talk about my feelings. The list goes on. There are 58 items on that list. Fallingstad and Rogers developed a different list. Here we see things like threatened to kill you, threatened to reveal important secrets, listen in on a phone conversation, read your email, or went through your belongings without your permission as a way to check on you. Again, the list is long, 42 items. Some overlap with Tolman's list. Even though a number of such lists exist, it turns out that therapists don't universally agree on the value of those lists. Does it have to be a pattern of such behaviors to qualify as psychological abuse? Does the intention of the perpetrator or effect on the victim deserve consideration when calling something abusive? How important is the context? What if the perpetrator says something and they're just joking or being hyperbolic? Can a person be unaware that they are being psychologically abused? Psychological abuse includes the perpetrator confusing the victim to such a degree that often the victim can't identify that they're being abused. So do we need an external observer to identify something as psychological abuse? Here's another important question. Does the event have to be a clear, identifiable behavior? Does it have to be observable? Is it something an external observer can even see or hear? Or can it be more insidious, more subtle, more difficult to identify? Down the road, I'm going to challenge the idea that it's an overt behavior. Another controversy that comes up in the literature concerns the word abuse. Is the word abuse the best word to describe it, or is it aggression? One prominent researcher, Diane Fallingstad, defines abuse as, quote, truly reprehensible, and aggression as less appalling. Some people have decided that it might be easier to look at categories of things rather than discrete behaviors to describe psychological abuse. Control, manipulation, degradation, isolation, cruelty. These can all be demonstrated by a lot of different behaviors. These all exist on continua from really bad to really, really sadistic. Where do we draw the line? Researchers agree that it's not easy or clear-cut. For this reason, the prevalence of psychological abuse is difficult to determine. In the United States, the CDC's National Intimate Partner and Sexual Violence Survey states that over 43 million women and 38 million men have experienced psychological aggression by an intimate partner in their lifetime. In New Zealand, a 2019 survey indicated that among partnered women between the ages of 18 and 64, almost 5% had experienced two or more acts of psychological intimate partner violence. That's for intimate partners. Now we add that for narcissistic abuse, we're also talking about bosses, coworkers, neighbors, family members, and associates from almost any context. It's impossible to know how many people have been psychologically abused. But I'm guessing you know if you've been harmed in this way. That's the picture when we look at adults hurting adults. We also know that adults hurt children. When we look at the experience in childhood, the picture gets even more blurry. Often, emotional abuse and neglect get lumped together. In childhood, emotional abuse gets defined as something along the lines of, quote, persistent disregard for a child's emotional and psychological needs, unquote. That's from McGuire, Williams, Naughton, Crowley, Tempest, Mann, Teague, and Kemp. You can see how this would include neglect. The Child Abuse Sourcebook defines the emotional abuse of children as, quote, a pattern of behavior that attacks a child's emotional and developmental sense of self-worth, unquote. The National Committee for the Prevention of Child Abuse defines the emotional abuse of children as the excessive, aggressive, or unreasonable demands that place expectations on a child beyond his or her capacity. Constant criticizing, belittling, insulting, rejecting, and teasing are some of the forms these verbal attacks can take. Emotional abuse also includes failure to provide the psychological nurturing necessary for a child's psychological growth and development, providing no love, support, or guidance. Some categories of behaviors we're looking at here, and I took these right from the source book, are rejecting, isolating, terrorizing, ignoring, corrupting, verbally assaulting. Now, this includes name-calling, threatening, sarcasm, and so on, or overpressuring. As the source book indicates, this is rarely recognized by child welfare systems. Thus, it usually lasts for the entirety of childhood. And again, we need to add that it's not just parents who can be emotionally abusive. Teachers, classmates, siblings, etc. can be hurtful. As you might guess, this highly impacts one's sense of self and expectations for what adult relationships should look and feel like. Remember, we tend to re-experience what happened to us early and repeatedly. That's a small overview of the academic literature on psychological and emotional abuse in childhood and between intimate partners. As I said, narcissistic abuse goes well beyond intimate partners in adulthood. You can encounter a potential narcissistic abuser in almost any context. There are two terms that pop up repeatedly in the popular treatments of narcissistic abuse: gaslighting and energy vampires. It seems that we differentiate narcissistic abuse from regular psychological abuse by these two experiences. Gaslighting is an idea taken from a movie made in 1940 and remade in 1944 based on a play, Gaslight. It's a story about a man who decides to drive his wife insane. First, he isolates her socially, convincing her that it's for her own good. Then he plays all kinds of tricks on her. He sneaks into the house and changes the brightness of the gas lights and does other things, like take things and then replace them. He engages in all kinds of subterfuge to convince her that she's hallucinating and ultimately that she's insane. This is where we get the term today. It means that one person engages with another in very subtle ways to undermine the latter's sense of reality, or their ability to trust their own perceptions and thoughts. In other words, to have their own experiences, which we know from last season of the podcast means that the person is alienated from their own mind. So narcissistic abuse is the process of one person purposely attempting to alienate another person from their mind. The other term we hear a lot today is energy vampire. The best treatment of this concept that I've come across is Christine Northrup's book, Dodging Energy Vampires. The term means exactly what it says, a person who just sucks the energy right out of you. How do you get victimized? How do you fall prey to their parasitic advances? The answer is, it's not you. They're very good at what they do. And this means that they take a lot of time and care to slowly entice you into the relationship. You don't see it coming. This is often one of the lasting after effects. After you've extricated yourself from them, you're left wondering, what's wrong with you that you let yourself get into that relationship in the first place? Therapists sometimes exacerbate this misconception. The answer is, there's nothing wrong with you. Let me repeat, they're good at what they do. They present at first as being able to engage in a mutual relationship. Whatever you're looking for, they can provide it. If you need a competent coworker, they present as energetic, knowledgeable, and collegial. If you want a friend, they present as funny, social, interested, interesting, and so on. But slowly, over time, things begin to shift. It turns out they can't deliver on things promised. They aren't able to uphold their end of the work project. In a friendship, they need you to listen to them more than they can listen to you. At first, it seems like it's okay. You can do part of the project or give them the attention they need. After all, in good relationships, things balance over time. But when you begin to get tired and feel unbalanced, they make it seem like you're the bad person for suggesting that they aren't doing their share, or that the relationship is unbalanced. They can use excessive flattery or overt contempt and degradation to get you to do their bidding. All the while, they're gaslighting you, undermining your own sense of reality, getting you to see the world through their eyes, getting you to believe that you're the one who's weak and that you need them more than they need you. In the end, you feel like a selfish, lazy, crazy, weak, unlovable, unworthy person. Only the narcissistic abuser would ever put up with the likes of you. And oh yeah, you're chronically exhausted. You have no energy to take care of yourself or do the things that used to bring you joy. So I hope that in all of this, you've gotten a flavor of what we mean when we say narcissistic abuse. You see that it's hard to nail down or specify what behaviors are indications of this kind of abuse. But in hearing the lists, you have a sense of whether or not you've been victimized in this way. Or maybe that you've done this to someone else. We'll look at different related concepts as we move through this season.
Interesting point that I want to pull out of that is the question you posed: does the intention and or effect deserve consideration when calling something abusive? I have my opinions about that, but let's hear yours.
Well, I want to hear yours. I, on one hand, want to say the intention of the abuser does not change the effect of their abuse. And when we look at an episode down the road, when we talk about what is a narcissist, we're going to see that there's a couple of different kinds of narcissists. And one of them has been labeled by some of the professionals as the oblivious narcissist, which suggests that they really don't necessarily have the intention of hurting you. They just have no idea that in their inability to see you, how much damage they're causing. So on the one hand, does the intention of the abuser differentiate between abuse and not abuse? I would say no. Now, does the effect? That becomes really difficult because sometimes, frequently, the effect is unconscious. And you may not know how that abuse affected you. You may not know the pain ultimately that it's causing you to experience by the effect, by the ongoing effect it has on your mind and the way you perceive and interpret experience. And so I would not want to say that you have to have conscious awareness of the effect. I guess I sidestepped that answer.
No, I think that's very interesting. I agree with you that the intention is not what defines whether or not it's abuse. I think it defines what kind of abuse it is in some cases. You know, I mean, it's still narcissistic abuse. But, you know, I've had people be malicious towards me, and I've had people just be really, you know, not realizing that what they're doing is coming out swinging because it's very clear that they are defending something very sensitive inside of them that's also very volatile. And, you know, if you're somebody who thinks that you might be on that spectrum of person, if you think that maybe there is a chance that in your sensitivities, you could be volatile and reach out and hurt people, you have the opportunity to really reach out and seek help and get better. And you're not broken. You're hurt. You've caused hurt, maybe. You'll have to reconcile with that. And I don't want anyone to give up on themselves.
Indeed.
Yeah. But it's still abuse. You still, if somebody, intention or not, and it can make the person who's experiencing the abuse have sympathy for their abuser. That's not broken in you either. Having sympathy for the people hurting you is a strength.
Yes. Yes.
So I don't think intention.
Well, and think about the parallel. If you have a person in court saying, "Your Honor, I didn't mean to push that person in front of an oncoming freight train." You're going to jail anyway.
Yeah, it's still manslaughter. in terms of the effect, and that's interesting, I hadn't thought about the perspective that you gave it. A lot of these effects could be unconscious, which is why we said early in the intro that you might not realize until it's put to you point blankly, like we're doing here. I think that's an interesting question to explore this season.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
We also talked about gaslighting and energy vampires.
Indeed. Gaslighting is a term that is more common and more accepted now in the professional community. The energy vampire is a term that most professionals wouldn't use. I think that it's a good descriptor. I think that many, many people, when I say the term energy vampire, they can relate to a human being that constantly just sucks the energy right out of them. You know a person, when they walk into a room, they suck all the oxygen out of the room. And so I think it has a lot of intuitive appeal.
So we're going to explore the concept of the energy vampire. We're not going to stay away from that word. We're not going to be scared of it just because it's not a, you won't find the term in the DSM. Right? We all know one or have known one. And if you're dealing with one right now, I'm just going to say you have every right to assert the boundaries you want to assert in your life with whoever you're trying to assert them with. Coworkers, strangers, family members, assert your boundaries.
I think I want to add this about energy vampires. The last time I encountered an energy vampire, I noticed what was going on and felt really, really bad and really, really guilty that how could I, you know, a therapist with so much experience, have allowed myself to get mired in this kind of dynamic? You know, I'm supposed to be above this, right? And I was processing it with a couple of really good friends whose presence in my life I really appreciate. And as we were talking about it, I came to the decision that if the way one avoids an energy vampire is by not being compassionate and being inconsiderate and being a different kind of person than I am, then you know what? I will choose to continue to encounter energy vampires. I will choose to keep my eyes open so that I can get rid of them quicker in my life, but I don't ever want to protect myself at the expense of my character.
Well said. I couldn't agree more. It's, you know, you could just live your life paranoid, the rest of it. You could just choose to think that everybody is going to be out to get you until they prove otherwise, that everybody's guilty until proven innocent. Or you can walk along the garden path and learn lessons for every loose cobblestone that causes you to trip. And sometimes you'll step and poop as you're walking on that garden path. And sometimes you'll learn how to better avoid it. And sometimes that poop is going to be really well concealed. And you're going to step in it anyway. And it's not your fault.
And it shouldn't keep you from walking that path.
Keep walking. Keep trekking.
Keep walking. Keep walking.
This is a great preview of what you're going to get all season. This is clearly very personal to the both of us. So positive affirmations all episode. Yes. You're perfect. You're wonderful. You're beautiful. Thank you for listening. We're going to be back in 2 weeks with a new episode. Find us on our Facebook group, Finding Our Minds Podcast. Email us, findingourminds, findingourminds@gmail.com.
Thank you. And for now, goodbye for Finding Our Minds, a podcast about
having mind, knowing mind, and changing mind. Finding Our Minds podcast is produced by Leah Fay and hosted by Dr. Margaret Arndt Cadigan, Associate Professor of Social Work at East Carolina University and Private Practice Clinical Social Worker. Her next book, Intuition in Therapy Practice, A Mind-Centered Depth Approach to Healing, is available September 28th, wherever books are sold, or now through eForm. Our technical director is David Cadigan, Associate Producer Lindsay Price. Artwork by Ray Gonzalez and music by Anton Ashmir. Our next episode will be available September 15th. See you then.